Finding great candidates to hire can be like, well, trying to find a needle in a haystack. Sure, you can post your job to some job board, but then all you can do is hope the right person comes along. Which is why you should try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter doesn't depend on candidates finding you. It finds them for you. Its powerful technology identifies people with the right experience and actively invites them to apply to your job. You get qualified candidates fast. So while other companies might deliver a lot of hay, ZipRecruiter finds you what you're looking for. The needle in the haystack.
See why 4 out of 5 employers who post a job on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free. That's right, free, at ZipRecruiter.com/zip. That's ZipRecruiter.com/zip. ZipRecruiter.com/zip.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
I have a question for you. Did Ram do enough with the brand new 2025 Commons?
This is an interesting question because we've had the new updated Ram 2500, 3500 on a bunch of different tests for fuel economy, towing, a little bit of off-roading. At this point, we've gotten to experience the truck pretty extensively, and I'd say it's about time to make a call. Is it enough?
Yeah, and we experienced several of these trucks, right? Not just one. So we had a heavy-duty Rebel with the Cummins. We even drove a couple of gas-powered Hemi trucks at the event, right?
Yeah, Power Wagon.
Power Wagon was one of them. And then we had, I went to Detroit, a couple months ago, and I drove a Limited, yep. New Cummins. And then we had recently a Laramie here in the office as well.
Yeah, and we've driven as well some more stripped-down basic Bighorn trims, as well as a Longhorn that was very Western, very ornate on the inside. The cool thing, my favorite thing about the launch of this new truck is that we got to drive it at Davis Dam, which has been, I know, a bucket list item for you for a long time.
It was.
That was the first time you got to Davis Dam,
exactly,
right?
Exactly, yeah. I've driven in that area. It's actually near Havasu.
Yeah. There's not a ton else that's there. There's some casinos.
It's in the middle of the desert because, I mean, this is what Nevada and Arizona, you know, are good at.
What was the pass at the top? Union Pass? Is that what it was?
Union Pass, yeah. So it's really confusing because, side note, Davis Dam is at the bottom of that grade.
Yeah, so you would think you...
you would climbing up to it, right?
Yeah, that Davis Dam is the destination you end up at, but it's just kind of off to the side as you start on your way up to the top of this pass. For those who don't know, Davis Dam is a hugely important industry standard test. So this is a big component of the J2807 SAE tow rating that all pickup trucks have to go through in order to be rated to tow a certain amount. It's primarily a test for the cooling systems because, like you said, Arizona-Nevada border gets really, really hot. You pick up a decent bit of elevation. You're towing uphill the whole time. The trucks have to be able to maintain a certain speed and maintain certain temperatures to be rated to tow.
While using maximum AC inside the cabin as well.
Yeah, so it's a difficult test.
Yeah, totally. And it was a bucket list for me. I think it was also one of the bucket lists for you.
For sure.
So that was really cool. And we have a map here, actually, towards... if you're watching us on TFL Talk, thank you. And it was kind of a dovetail to the testing we do, right? Here in Colorado, because we do iGauntlet. This is the Eisenhower Tunnel grade, which manufacturers also use for a lot of their testing and verifying their prototypes. Even one of our viewers saw a Ram Charger hybrid range extended truck near Eisenhower Tunnel as well.
Yeah, because here in the mountains of Colorado, especially on I-70, some of the steep grades and high altitudes that we have here obviously put trucks through their paces when you're pulling trailers. That's why we do it, and that's why the manufacturers do it as well. And we've gotten to drive the new Rams hooked up to trailers, both on Davis Dam and at the Ike Gauntlet. We haven't done our toaster test yet, have we?
On the new comments, no.
Which
no.
We should do.
We should toast it.
Yeah.
We should toast one of these.
So there's still a few things left that we haven't done, but we've done quite a
but
bit
we
of
did
testing,
efficiency
I'm happy
testing.
To say.
We yeah. did efficiency testing as well. And we kind of compared it against some other trucks. You know, we recently had it up against, in a drag race, against Ford, the Powerstroke, and of course the Chevy Duramax. We actually happen to own a Duramax right now. And before this Cummins, we owned the previous version for almost 3 years, actually.
Yeah.
Well, 2.5 years. So that was a long time that we owned the previous iteration of the Cummins.
Yeah, so we're familiar with earlier versions of the truck as well. I own a second-gen Ram.
Yeah.
Wow, our footage these days is looking really high def.
I think it's because we were actually, you know, Ian and Mary were in charge of filming, and they were doing, you know, some sort of manual focus,
yeah.
manual exposure.
Manual white balance.
Manual white balance.
Ian is a big fan of that.
That was really huge.
Yeah, no, the footage is looking good. I haven't actually watched this video of ours because I was there, so I kind of know what happened. But this was a really cool video. One of our most recent tests that we did that you mentioned briefly is we did some drag racing with all of the HD trucks configured as diesels. In their most powerful versions, which that's only relevant to the Ford, because at this point, the only diesel that you can get in multiple different output levels is the Ford, since the Ram, the Cummins, is just one output now.
Mm-hmm.
So we got to drag race all of these trucks as diesels in their most powerful form, towing, is it about
6,500 pounds,
and did a full quarter mile with them, which was cool.
Yeah, so we could see how the trucks behave. So where should we start? By the way, we also have a lot of news in this segment, on this podcast. So we'll get to that just in a few minutes. But where do you want to start? Do you want to start with the good or the bad? How do you want to start that?
Why don't we go ahead and get into what it is about the new Rams that has you questioning whether it's enough?
Yeah, that's a good thing. So first of all, the chassis and the cab are the same as before. So let's take a quick step back. So for a heavy-duty vehicle, and especially a commercial vehicle, they have really long life cycles, right?
Yeah.
So if you look at, you know, some of the vans, like the Chevy Express, GMC Savannah, that have been unchanged for,
20 years, 35 years.
So heavy-duty trucks are kind of similar in this space where they don't get changed quite often. But in 2017, Ford introduced basically an all-new generation of the Super Duty, and was truly all new. New frame, new aluminum body, updated engines.
Still some carryovers, like you said, updated engine, not a completely new engine architecture or anything, because that happens even less frequently than them going through and redesigning chassis and cabs.
Yeah, but that was kind of a step for them. I think their truck was about 16 or 17 years old, if you look at the bones of it, right? So they did a huge change. Then in 2020, GM did the same thing, right? They redesigned their chassis. The frames got bigger and stiffer. The cab got bigger, right? More comfortable. The trucks got a little bit taller, which is a lot of people don't like that because of visibility, right?
Sure.
And they also changed and updated their engines along the same time. So now Ram, I mean, their cab is really, I don't know how long it dates to. I think it's 2007, maybe, where the last time that their crew cabs were really redesigned. And the heavy duty is still using that similar structure, which is actually a little bit smaller than some of the newer trucks.
Yeah, so the Rams in short bed form have the smallest short bed of the three.
And the smallest rear seat, arguably.
Yeah, which for some people could be a perk for maneuverability and livability.
Yes.
But it's a noticeable difference. The other two in short bed form have more space in their beds.
And that helps you with gooseneck towing and especially fifth wheel camper towing. Because if you put a fifth wheel camper like we've done with our Cummins in the past, you really have to watch your turning radius, because as soon as you start cranking, if you have that large fifth wheel camper wall, you know, sitting behind you in the bed, it's pretty easy to have the camper come in contact with your cab.
For sure.
So there's also Ram has a mega cab.
Yeah.
So
that's
a very spacious one.
A nice option to have. And I think to balance this out, since I know you've got some gripes, I'm going to take the other side of things.
Okay.
And I'm going to defend it, which is easy for me to do. I drive a Ram.
Okay. Okay.
But I'm going to defend it and say, you still, if you really need extra bed space, you can get an 8-foot bed.
Absolutely. You could definitely get a Ram currently.
And some, like, the, what is the GM bed 6'10"?
Yes.
Yeah, so that, yes, that's closing in on an 8-foot bed. So one could supposedly argue.
In fact,
that what's the point of having the two bed lengths that are that similar when you could have, like Ram does, a shorter bed, a slightly more maneuverable truck, and then the full 8-foot for people that really need that big bed. What do you think?
Your point is well taken. I think I would support that.
There could be something there.
I would agree with that.
You can also call me stupid. That's fine.
Cole, I did a video. One of the video you pulled up before was me with a long bed Ram. This video. This was a 25. This was kind of a distinct build configuration because it was not a 1-ton. It wasn't a 3500 single rear wheel. It was actually a 2500 crew cab with a long bed. Look at that. It looks like a limousine.
It's a long boy.
Yeah. It looks like a limousine. Okay. I'll give you that. But here's where I am. What was about... Okay. You and I went to that event.
Yep.
And you have to agree that the 2500 trucks, not 3500s, because those are pretty competitive on payload, but the 25s were uncompetitive on payload numbers.
That's true. Compared to other trucks from Ford and from GM, they were down on payload. But something interesting happened recently.
Yes.
Where we got some news, some information from Ram that they upped the payload figures on a lot of those 2,500 trucks, bringing them to the point of being competitive.
Yeah, they actually raised most of them about 850 pounds,
which is a substantial amount. And we weren't expecting that.
No, that kind of came out of nowhere. Came out of nowhere. In fact, it was kind of noticed by some of the people actually shopping for trucks, and there was a video published about it. So it was a little bit of a surprise. But we checked with Ram, our official channels, you know, our connections. And they, you know, they gave us an official statement that, in fact, they changed. So basically what they did is they moved the gross vehicle weight rating up higher, just over 11,000 pounds. And the explanation that they gave was that before they were a little conservative on some of their numbers and J2807 and how that all tied in. And then they retested and found that the truck... By the way, this is only for the Cummins, though. Pretty much. They lifted the Cummins payload numbers. The Hemi already had pretty good numbers because it was a lighter truck to begin with.
Yeah.
But they said because the diesel had, you know, slightly, you know, beefier frame, different suspension, that they were comfortable enough raising that number and giving it 850 more pounds.
Which is not to say that they made any mechanical changes from the Cummins models when we drove it at the launch event to now when they've upped the payload. So mechanically...
They were the same.
Yeah, mechanically they're unchanged, but like you said, they recertified, retested them, which just to reflect the amount of capability it seems like they have.
But the timing is unfortunate. Would you agree? Because why... Okay,
It would have been better if it launched that way.
Yeah. When we showed up at Davis Dam, they would have said, boys and girls, we have really great payload numbers. Let's go. Let's do this. What happened was we saw the trucks with those payloads. We tested them and we drove them. And then, 3-4 months go by? Not a lot of time, actually.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, wait a minute. You know, the payload is now higher.
Yeah, it does. As you've described it before, it feels a little bit like some magic dust being sprinkled on there. And you can definitely look at it that way.
But I'm happy still.
Yeah, I'm happy too, because I wouldn't personally be worried about using a truck to do exactly what it's rated to do, what the manufacturer tells you it's capable of doing, because they're usually pretty conservative. There's plenty of people out there that are pushing these trucks well beyond what they're actually rated to be doing. And, you know, sometimes they break in half, but if you keep it within the realm of what they tell you exactly, it should be able to do, yes, you should be fine.
Well, here at TFL Truck, you know, I'm pretty hard-nosed about checking the payload numbers, the gross vehicle numbers, and the towing numbers, because we want to use the truck near the limit, but not beyond it, right?
Yeah, and it hasn't steered us wrong.
No, and so. It's all good. But we get comments sometimes, Andre, stop talking about payloads. I can put whatever the heck I want in my truck, and I can carry it from here to Timbuktu.
That's a hot take. Well, but to be fair, there is some flexibility, I suppose, depending on how you're using it. If you're trying to move a trailer that's heavier than what your truck is ready to tow, but you're moving it
across your ranch,
across your ranch on flat ground,
yeah,
we're still not going to recommend that. But maybe it's a situation where you could get away with it.
Yeah.
So right, there's.
But going 80 miles an hour in Texas overloaded, that's a very dangerous situation.
That's what I was going to say, because especially the kind of testing that we try to do, where we're at the Ike Gauntlet, we're on I-70, 60, 65 mile per hour speed limit, 7% grade, other traffic on the road, you're at high elevation, so the powertrain is especially stressed. Those aren't situations where you really want to go beyond what the truck is rated to do, because that is exactly the kind of scenario where you might find a failure point in your vehicle because of the conditions that you're moving weight around in.
Okay, one more complaint I have.
And
maybe then we can come up with a actual solution to this, or the answer, is that styling-wise and kind of options-wise, the truck remained the same. That could be good and bad. I mean, you're paying, let's say, the Laramie truck we recently had was about $84,000. So, okay, I'm buying a new model of the truck. I'm actually financing or paying a lot of money for this particular truck, but it's differentiated from a previous model in a small way. You see what I'm saying? Like, I want it to be a little bit more different. Just kind of distinct.
Yeah, if you're buying a brand new thing, it's nice when it also looks and feels new. And I think that Ram has maintained a lot of the things that have been consistently good in these trucks for a long time. Obviously, the styling is very similar. The headlights, I know I've heard mixed reactions on. They I don't feel strongly one way or another with them. I think they're fine. The new mirrors, I know you're actually a fan
really
of.
Great. Yeah, I love it.
Yeah,
I love
and,
it.
Well, they redesigned the mirror before doing the whole...
Well, because before it was... Yeah, a couple of years ago they redesigned it.
Yeah.
But before you have to have your moves...
Flip them up and readjust everything.
Yeah, you have to have your mirrors in a towing position versus folded.
Would you say these are your favorite mirrors? What's your favorite mirror on any HD truck?
You know what?
We're getting really in the weeds here.
Yes, but this is important because brand pride. No. So
Andre's best mirror award.
Ding! You get like
a belt buckle.
So I love what Ram did with their mirrors because their controls are in one place.
True.
You have folding, extending.
You can control both parts of the mirror.
Both parts of the mirror and lights, because those mirrors have built-in lights and stuff like that. Amazing stuff. But the surface area of the mirror is still relatively smallish when you compare it to, for example, Ford.
Right.
Ford surface area is a little bit larger, a little bit better for visibility. But Ford doesn't allow you to do power adjustment on the lower convex mirrors.
Which is pretty nice.
Which is nice because here's the thing about the pickup truck, right? You want to go to a job site by yourself or your ranch by yourself or your campground by yourself and actually complete a task without asking for a lot of help.
And
right.
Sometimes company trucks have different people in and out of the driver's seat, and so you might have to adjust those mirrors pretty often.
So I think Ram, GM also has pretty good as far as visibility and as far as the size of the mirror.
Sure.
But I would, you know what, my award goes to Ram, I think.
Wow. Big deal.
Ding.
It's close. Obviously, it's a close matchup.
Yeah, yeah.
They're all really good mirrors. But there you go. So that's one difference in some of the
newer
Rams.
I think it has to do with control that they provide.
I agree.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so back to the earlier point, though, a lot of the truck doesn't look or feel that new. I think the interiors on the new trucks are good.
And they were good before.
I would argue that they were already good.
Yeah.
They still are. I kind of like Uconnect. It can be a little glitchy sometimes, but when it's working, it's a pretty easy to use system. I like that about them. I like the way they look. But to your point, I will grant you, the truck doesn't look or feel dramatically different from what it used to be. Also partly because, and to your earlier point, the cab, the structure isn't.
Isn't new. Yeah,
yeah,
exactly.
So it is a lot of the same.
Yeah, yeah.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states, thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab-tested, real results. Go to Mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's Mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
Which also probably is good for RAM, because they don't have to do retooling. You know, their factories are still running in the similar, you know, with the similar parts and the similar structures.
They don't have the same kind of budget as other manufacturers do.
Yeah, so maybe it's good for them, for the business. But finally, let's talk about, before the verdict, let's talk about powertrain, because this was a change.
Yeah.
And a welcome change, I think. The engine got a little bit more horsepower, the Cummins I'm talking about, and it got a new transmission.
Yeah, and it's now one output. They did make some pretty decent changes to the motor itself, and it's now 430 horsepower, which is the least amount of the three, but what, 1,075 pound-feet of torque? So 100 pound-feet of torque more than the Duramax. And matching Ford's standard output on torque.
And a little bit less than their high output.
Less than the high output.
Yes.
On the power stroke.
But it's six in a row. And what do they say about six in a row?
Ready to tow.
Bam.
Yeah, which is pretty nice. So that's all good. The biggest update, the one that we were most looking forward to, is the 8-speed rather than the old 6-speed transmission, which makes a massive difference, especially, again, when you're pulling a lot of weight. Think semi-trucks. There's a reason that big trucks have a lot of gears. And especially when we're up in the mountains, all those extra ratios that the truck can move between makes your experience pulling a trailer through the mountains much better, much more comfortable. It makes a big difference.
And I would say the biggest improvement was the smoothness of the system, right? Where, like, the gear changes, at least imperceptible to me. Like, if I'm just driving, not paying attention, you know, to exactly what the transmission is doing, I'm not noticing those gear changes. It's just very natural. The truck is just, you know, accelerating like I want it to accelerate. Also, the exhaust brake is still one of the best in the business.
Yeah, it's my favorite. I find the exhaust brake in the Ram to be the most noticeable when it kicks on and the most predictable. Because there's times where I'll be driving around in the Duramax or in the Power Stroke, and I'll let off the throttle.
Move to the brake
a little bit. Where is it? But then another time, I'm slowing down and it kicks on hard.
It almost has a brain of its own. Almost.
Yeah, it feels in the Ram very, very predictable, dependable, and it feels like in the Ram it actually does a lot.
So I would agree. I think they improved the drivability of the truck. We saw it on our Denver 100 loop also when I tested it. Unfortunately, and this was a big bummer for me, efficiency, right? So none of the truck we tested had 10 or 15,000 miles on them. And arguably, if you talk to some engineers, they say the Cummins performs a little bit better after 10 or 15,000 miles as it all kind of wears in.
And we've seen that reflected in MPG tests that we've done in the past.
Especially in the truck we owned.
Yeah.
But still, it's would say noticeably less efficient than the, some of the Duramaxes we tested and also some of the Power Strokes we tested at the same time.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And for that,
Dude, I really want...
I wish there was something I could say to... Yeah. That's,
well,
that's
the data speaks for itself.
For sure.
Right? So, okay. So maybe we can retest one in another some months, you know, when it has a lot of miles.
But it doesn't seem to be dramatically better on efficiency.
Yeah. So here's my verdict. I think if you were a Ram or Dodge Ram customer in the past, this is a great upgrade because you're used to the way the truck behaves from the past.
Yep.
You're getting a newer, smoother system. You're getting some horsepower torque benefits. You're getting drivability benefits and even payload benefits now as well.
For sure. But
I don't think this truck, the new truck, is going to get Ford customers switching over or maybe a lot of GM customers switching over.
And if you have a Ram that's a year old or 2 years old, there's no reason to run out and buy a brand new truck unless you really need that payload or there's a specific feature that you're looking for or if the old six-speed really bugs you and you want an eight-speed. But for the most part, it wouldn't be worth running out and trading in a not very old truck for one of these because, like we said, it's just not dramatically different. What I appreciate is that they kept the things that have been good, like we said, very similar styling, similar interiors and technology, all nice stuff, similar powertrain, but just refined and improved in some of the really weak spots. That six-speed especially, that had to go. The eight-speed is the biggest difference overall to me in this truck driving it. And all of these HDs are so good now. They're within, almost within a margin of error of each other. Definitely within a few percentage points as far as performance goes. And it's worth mentioning, too, that in the drag race testing that we did with the Cummins versus the Duramax versus the Powerstroke, the Cummins was the slowest.
But not by a lot, actually.
Not by a ton.
With a trailer.
Yeah. Yeah. And most people aren't buying HD trucks to drag racing, but accelerating with a trailer behind you does matter, especially when you're up here in the mountains. Again, steep grades and you're trying to merge in with traffic, it's important. This truck was slower, but not dramatically so, a couple tenths in the quarter
so
mile.
So actually, when we did the towing one, it was a little bit more evident that the Cummins kind of stepped into its own. By itself, it may not be, you know, the flashiest, quickest vehicle out there, but
it's not a very rev happy motor.
Well, it's a straight six. It's kind of like a big rig.
It does its thing.
Yeah, it does its thing. So I would say if I'm always really ambitious, like I'm really competitive in general. So I really wanted to Ram to really knock it out of the ballpark. I don't think they did that. I think they, like I said, they improved it, but not enough to get maybe sway a lot of other customers their way.
And especially when a truck is hitting the market after its competitors have already been updated and you're kind of waiting for the last one showing up to the party, you would expect, all right, you know, well, let's see the party tricks you're going to bring to the table that nobody else has brought yet. And you come in just middle of the pack in most things. Well, it's a little bit of a letdown because you had the others to benchmark.
Yeah.
So you could have tried to go above and beyond, but instead you just kind of caught up.
And I think it could pay dividends like 2 or 3 years down the road when the ZF is bulletproof. And if this engine, you know, changes that they did are bulletproof.
Yeah, or maybe if they come out with a 7.2 Cummins.
Or also an octane regular gas burning Cummins.
Mostly the diesel, though.
Okay.
A big diesel. They had a
7.2. Bigger, So
There have been whispers of a 7.2.
Yeah, I heard this.
Could be cool.
Yeah, so I think Ram, I would say they still have a way to go. But, you know, that's a good first step.
But yeah, I would say it's a good truck overall. Also, a very good warranty.
Right. 2026 trucks get 10 years and 100,000-mile powertrain warranty, with an asterisk being for the original owner.
Yeah.
So that really, really great warranty is not transferring over.
But if you're the type of person that buys a truck, holds on to it for a while, that could be pretty useful.
Especially if you drove 100,000 miles in like 3 years.
Yeah.
Bam, you got yourself covered, you know, for that time.
So again, some hotshotters.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might be good for him.
Really cool. All right.
More news.
Let's switch gears a little bit into a little bit more rapid fire news. I really wanted to, we alluded to this last episode, but I wanted to talk about CAFE standards, corporate average fuel economy. I know everybody loves corporate speak.
Oh, yeah. Who doesn't love some good regulation?
Regulation and averages.
Yeah, especially on fuel economy.
We love regulation and averages.
Yeah.
So the recent bill that was passed basically said that there are no longer the penalties on not having your corporate for the manufacturer side, your corporate fuel economy for your entire fleet of the vehicles you build. There's the penalties for going over certain numbers will not be enforced.
Yeah. So basically, technically the CAFE standards are still there, but there won't be financial implications of not following those standards. So it is essentially
like it's like saying the speed limit is 65 on this road,
but
if you go 75,
we're not going to do anything.
We might pull you over, but there's not going to be any ticket or anything like that.
Yeah,
so associated with it. So that's what it feels like. Except, so there's another caveat where emissions, right? I was recently in Detroit, and I heard Tim Kuniskis speak. He's the CEO of Ram. I heard him speak about emissions, and he basically said, this was a month ago, so I know things are changing very, very rapidly, but about a month ago, he said, emission standards are not going away. So they need a mix of different powertrains, right? Some hybrid, some electric, some diesel, some gas, all together to comply with certain emission standards and also keep their engines clean, right? Nobody's deleting their truck from the factory, at least not right now.
Yeah.
So that's another thing. And emissions usually go step in step with efficiency, right? I mean, for diesels, I think emission systems could hurt efficiency.
Yeah.
So sometimes they don't go step to step.
But it'll be interesting to see what kind of impact this has. I think there's a lot of people that are expecting that, you're maybe going to be able to go out and buy a deleted truck from the dealership brand new.
No.
Yeah, it's not that extreme, but it is interesting. What do you think? Are we going to be seeing V8 Ford Rangers coming out, supercharged, with no cats and just pipes out the hood?
I was thinking, so here's my take on that question. I know you're being a little bit,
a little dramatic
there,
yeah.
Dramatic there. But if I, we're all in business. I mean, TFL Truck is also in a business. We want to produce the most profitable things. You know, we want to have fun, we want to do good stuff, but we also want to be profitable and running a successful business. As such, if I was a manufacturer of trucks, I would produce an engine that's the most profitable for me, right? If efficiency is not my highest priority anymore, I mean, if I could turn down that knob just a little bit, I would turn up the profitability knob, right? So, and by doing that, let's take Ford, for example. I think their most profitable engines are probably their diesels because they're associated, with very optioned and very luxurious trucks.
Yeah.
Also, their supercharged Raptors are probably very, very profitable for them. What if they put a supercharged 5.2 into more F-150s?
That would be pretty interesting.
Do you think that would hurt the value of the Raptor R, or would it just bring more customers in? How do you think that works?
Were you thinking like a supercharged V8
street truck? Yeah, like a street truck.
No, I think it would attract a different buyer, or the same buyer for a second truck, somebody that's got an amount of money that is hard to fathom. Have a garage full of supercharged.
Yeah,
Fords.
Here's my truck for when I go in the dirt. Here's a truck on the highway.
My Raptor R, my Mustang GTD.
Yeah. And why
my
not?
My Ford GT, all that stuff.
Yeah,
man,
why not?
The more supercharged V8s, the better. There's definitely a lot of interest in V8s, as we saw when Ram reintroduced the Hemi. As soon as order books opened for that, people were throwing down a lot of orders in a pretty short time frame. So clearly the V8 is not going away. CAFE standards and enforcement aside, There's been already a big investment into the next generation of V8s from GM, especially. They've put quite a bit of money into it, and it's been a high-profile news story that Ram has brought back the V8. Hopefully, they're going to invest in updating those engines as well. So V8s aren't going anywhere. Mm. It would be cool if we see V8s and all kind of other stuff.
And actually,
maybe some crazy stuff.
I would agree. And Tommy recently went to the Rubicon trail.
Yes.
And he drove V8 Wranglers.
Yeah.
And he made an interesting point. He said that why would Jeep invite a bunch of people, fly everybody out to California, run the Rubicon Trail, which is very difficult to do,
yeah,
and bring a lot of V8 powered Wranglers?
If
they were not going to sell them.
Exactly.
Right?
If they were planning to do away with the V8 Wrangler, it would be weird to do an event that features very heavily a V8 Wrangler.
Yeah.
It just wouldn't make sense.
So, do you see where I'm going?
Yeah, so
Gladiator.
Oh, now that would be interesting. That's what the Gladiator needs, right?
392 Gladiator.
That's a good idea. I like that idea. You know what else I like?
What?
Coyote powered full size Bronco.
Ooh.
Because they had the race. Yes. They had that race model that they made a couple of, and it cost well into six figures. But a production Coyote powered full size Bronco? Tell me that doesn't get the juices flowing a little.
Well, because it's the experience, right?
Yeah.
Can you just think of removing the top on your truck or SUV, maybe even removing the doors like the Wrangler and the Bronco.
And then you just get even more access to the sound of that V8.
Surrounding you.
The other thing?
From every direction.
The other thing that is just so much fun about driving the 392 Wrangler is the suspension on that Jeep is made primarily to crawl over rocks and to articulate well and to be relatively comfortable on an uneven surface. So when you are on the street and you put the pedal down in a 392 Wrangler, the back end of that Jeep squats, the front end comes up in the air, and it just feels like a mad science project. It makes it so entertaining to drive. It's so loud. 392 Wrangler.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood. Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC. Member SIPC, a registered broker-dealer.
Yeah, so. Especially it has like exhaust valves where you could select them and then, you know, have less sound or more sound.
That for me is top three. That's probably top three brand new cars I've driven at this job.
392 Wrangler?
392 Wrangler.
But there's a but, and it's the price of that particular Wrangler, because right now it's pretty crazy. I mean, they're still building some of the, what they're calling it, like last edition, and these are like $95,000 Jeeps, which is pretty insane. Why not just put a 5.7 Hemi? Do you really have to have a 6.4?
Yeah.
You know, why not just
put,
you know?
It's still going to be like 70, 80 grand instead of 80 or 90, well, right? Because what so Alex, our old coworker.
Yeah.
Alex has a two-door Wrangler Sport.
Is his a V6?
It is.
Okay.
It's a V6, but it's a Wrangler Sport, so it is the base trim.
Oh, I see where you're
going. But it's well optioned. So he's got you know, the nicer seat material. He's got the nicer headlights. He's got some of the driver assistance stuff on there, some color matched things, whatever. It's a 50-something $1,000 sticker price vehicle.
He got a deal on it, but originally it was 50 plus.
Yeah, he got it for 10 grand under sticker, but the sticker price on it was, if I remember right.
In the mid-50s or something, right?
Exactly, in the mid-50s. Yeah. And this is a Sport. This is a base model Wrangler.
Yeah. When he, I remember this.
Which is
when
shocking.
He came to our meeting, you know, our morning meeting, and he said, hey, guys, he was really happy. You know, he bought the truck, he bought the Jeep, and he brought it in. And then when he said the price, I think a lot of the jaws were hitting the table.
Because it's a Sport.
Yeah.
It's a base model. So, sure, a 5.7 Hemi would be cool because it should be less expensive than the 6.4 Hemi, but by how many thousands of dollars? Two, three grand, four grand? Probably not by a ton.
Yeah.
So but, I'm still on board.
And so, but. And I think, you remember, I don't know if you remember, but like before the 392 Wrangler came out, a bunch of us here were sitting around be like, wouldn't it be nice if there was, because aftermarket used to do that, right? Aftermarket.
Yeah, AEV.
AEV and some other shops would, you take them a Wrangler or a Gladiator, and it would come back with a V8. You know, you would have to pay a pretty coin, you know, maybe 20, 30 grand for that swap.
Yeah.
But, and then all of a sudden, some mad scientists, like you said, at Jeep Factory said, okay, we'll do that for you, integrate it, test it, crash test it, prove it.
Yeah, it's all integrated into the tech on the screens. Yeah. Everything works as new because it is. That's how it left the factory.
It is new. And so those comments which say, you know what, a 5-liter would not fit under the hood of a Bronco. Yeah, but if they really wanted to, it would fit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
I don't think the Coyote is that.
It's not that big of a motor.
I haven't swapped a Coyote, so I don't know. Yeah. But I wouldn't think that the footprint of a Coyote is necessarily that huge.
Before we go, I wanted to talk about some sales numbers and some things happening in popularity of trucks. I wanted to save that since we're talking about swaps.
Yeah, because there's a few surprises.
Yeah, there's some surprises. So let's save that a tiny bit later. Should we talk a little bit about swaps?
We can talk about swaps. Do you want to start with this one?
Yeah, so let's start with the Loaf. So if you've been watching TFL Truck, you may know that I have this old Soviet van, a UAZ Buhanka van, 4x4, basically a mid-engine super van.
The Buhanka is kind of the affectionate
title
given to it.
It's not an official name. What's, you know, it's kind of like a high boy, you know, Ford high boy.
Yeah.
What, high boy was a nickname given to the truck, but then the manufacturer kind of adopts that name a little bit.
But what's your van's actual model?
UAZ 452. And I know it's very meaningful.
Catchy. Yeah.
It's very meaningful and very catchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. UAZ 452. I think it came after the 450.
That would make sense.
So it's a 452.
Is there a 451?
No. They skipped the number, I think.
Interesting.
Yeah. So anyways, it's not a very catchy name. But David said, I have a 4.8 Silverado V8 laying around on the floor of my shop.
Yeah, which is kind of an unusual engine option. They were in GMT 800s, right?
Yeah, and this one was in 2003, so it was a little bit later model. It's kind of a work truck, work Silverado engine, right? So it's kind of a base 4.8.
Were those 4.8s in GMT 400s too? What year did it go from 400 to 800?
Can you
I feel like
up?
I should know that.
We should know this.
Because I love GMT 400s and GMT 800s. GMT 800 years. Yeah, let's see. This is just
GMT,
there's someone just screaming at their computer screen right now.
And they're probably walking their
GMT
dog.
GMT 800, 99 to 07.
Cool. Yes, 800. So somebody probably walking their dog and just screaming into their...
Come on! It's so obvious.
So, but anyways...
Anyways.
It's an LS swap. Let's call it an LS swap.
Yeah, so you got a Soviet van with a Chevy motor.
Yeah, and also a 4-speed auto from a Chevy. It was David and I chose a 700 R4 because... so this was, you know, kind of a passion project, plus a lot of donations. Like David donated the engine, and then our friend Dan Atkinson, my friend Dan, donated the Terminator X Holley engine controller. And our engine controller that we had does not have transmission controller built into it. So we wanted a non-computer controlled transmission.
I don't blame you.
And then NP205 was the transfer case, which is an old school bulletproof gear driven.
Been around for a long time.
This was from the 70s and it still works perfect. But now my transmission I had a problem with. I burned out third and fourth gears. So the transmission I got maybe was not the highest quality rebuild. Plus, it was my first LS swap and David's first LS swap. So we didn't know Hopefully not the last. And my update on my project is that I just called another shop, Colorado Transmissions, and the owner, Ruben. And Ruben agreed to take my loaf under his arm.
Under his wing?
Under his wing. And so to speak.
It's like an apprentice.
Yes. And he's done many, even though he's a transmission expert, he knows most transmissions. He's got encyclopedic knowledge and rebuild. Nice. You know, he can rebuild one probably with one hand tied behind his back.
Yeah, I bet he can do a 4L60 like that.
He's in the process of convincing me to put a 4L60 computer controlled.
A 4L slippy?
Yes. Well, he called it 60.
Yeah. Some people call it a slippy, but instead of a 60.
But this is
why not a 4L80? I guess a 4L80 is really long.
It's the size problem.
Yeah, yeah.
Like all we all have
that. I think Cole knows how long 4L80s are, right? How long is a 4L80?
Cole, our producer Cole, does not know.
Turns out he doesn't. Dang, 4L80 is longer than I believe it's longer than a 6L80.
So here's my issue. Do you see how short this van is?
it's got to be 10 inches long.
It's
we've got a toy version of his van. The real one's bigger.
It's in real life, its wheelbase is 90 and a half inches.
That is super short.
So it's a very short wheelbase. The engine is in kind of between the driver and the passenger in the middle. And it's got a lot of cargo capacity because it's basically an open.
You can use it as a coffee warmer.
This toy one?
With the motor in your
real motor, yes. You could use it, especially right ahead of the motor where the radiator is. You could put your coffee mug
there. Nice and toasty.
And it's very nice.
Yeah.
Although, hey, you know what happened? I drove it 20 miles round trip in second gear because I didn't have third and fourth.
Yeah.
The engine was screaming. And I went 41 miles an hour on side roads. So nice. I did not impede traffic on the highway. Too much. I got some fresh fuel because I needed some fresh fuel. I drove it to the gas station. And nothing overheated. It was a hot day. It was like 92 degrees outside. It was a hot day. David's radiator worked brilliantly.
That's the thing that we, I think, have in common with our LS swaps and automatics.
Tell me about your LS swap.
You know, the motor is just, you can't phase it. It's the motor is happy as a clam. As long as it's got oil near it.
You have a 6 liter.
So I've got an LS2 out of a 2007 Corvette that I put into an old Land Rover for no justifiable reason. It wouldn't make sense to do for anyone other than me, and luckily it's my name on the title, so that's the only sense it has to make, and I like it a lot. But it's been a similarly interesting and challenging process. It's funny when you poke around on the internet.
The webs?
Yeah. Uh-huh. When you poke around there, people talk about LS swaps like, oh, yeah, dude, LS swaps.
I did it last weekend.
Yeah, yeah. It took me half an hour. I don't doubt that there are people that are that talented, but even though they're a very common engine swap, there's still aspects of it that are challenging, especially if you're trying to use an automatic, because automatics, it's like everybody I talk to is having some issue with the automatic that's swapped into their
anything. Yeah.
Automatics are a pain. My automatic woes are different from yours. I went for a 6L80, so that's a computer-controlled transmission.
Six-speed,
which is great, especially here in the mountains. I want to use this vehicle as a rock crawler, but also kind of a daily driver. And if I'm driving up I-70 to go skiing or to go camping or something, or even just go up into the mountains and find a trail, that six-speed is going to make a massive difference versus the four-speed that it had originally or any other four-speed. So the six-speed was important to me. Also, I don't plan to sell it, but if I did, the resale value on similar ones that I've seen with six speeds versus a four speed, massive difference, like 3x.
I would love a six speed in my loaf,
but
I just didn't have the physical space.
Yeah,
inside of the
The 6L80 I've got is actually surprisingly compact. It's again, I'm pretty sure it's actually shorter than a 4L80, but. Even so, yeah, it is. I would assume it's probably bigger, longer than a 4L60. I don't know.
I think Ruben would know.
Yeah, I'm sure he does. Yeah. I'm sure he knows intimately. But the 6L80 being computer controlled is it offers some challenges to get the programming, the software side of things, which is pretty much all over my head sorted. So I've got mine at our buddy Jordan Townsend's shop. He does a lot of dyno tuning. He can mess with the software. So he's going through mine at the moment. But man, automatic transmissions, both of us, if we had put manuals in these things,
did you consider a manual? Was that an option, or was it just difficult?
No, it wouldn't have been difficult. It would have been easier. I would have been driving it for the last couple of months if I had gone for a manual. But what I wanted for this vehicle was to be a daily driver that also my girlfriend could jump in and go drive. And also for a rock crawler, a manual is not my personal favorite. My Cummins is a manual, and for that truck that I don't really use as a rock crawler, I love the manual in that truck. I definitely wouldn't want my Ram to be auto, also for other reasons. But the Land Rover I wanted to be an auto just for simplicity and ease of use off-road.
Yeah. And on-road.
And for versatility for my girlfriend to be able to jump in and drive it as well. So I didn't really consider it for this, but man, that automatic has not made things easy.
We consider the manual for my Loaf, but the engine and the transmission are behind you, not next to you or in front of you. So making the linkages work for a manual would have been a humongous project that we didn't really have time or budget to work on. Or maybe, I mean, David is amazing, three-dimensional builder. I mean, he can just envision a part and then he can create it with his hands. But even David said, Andre, the linkage on this would be very difficult to produce. So those are some of our updates on our projects.
100%. And automatics are, there's some perks to them. But for me as well, every other transmission that I've pulled out of a vehicle that I've owned has been a manual. So there's been a bit of a learning curve with some of the differences in the automatic. I'm just not used to. So had to learn some new things. And, automatics are just so delicate also.
Yeah, but, I mean, when they work, I mean, they should work.
Yeah.
It's just getting them to that point.
Mine has some fancy new billet parts in it now, so hopefully it'll be pretty good.
Yeah, especially, like, selecting the right torque converter, you know, all that stuff. I think we're learning quite a bit these projects. All right, let's just quickly hit this piece of news. You were telling me last week, because I saw the new Grenadier SUV, right? Grenadier, Ineos Grenadier, and also the Quartermaster truck. I saw them in April at the New York Auto Show, and they were sitting a little bit taller.
Maybe a lot taller.
With portal axles and 37s.
Yeah, so this was a pretty interesting bit of news. To my understanding, it's not confirmed for the U.S. yet, but Ineos collaborated with another company called LaTeX. I hope I'm saying that well enough. I think it's a German company.
So, Cole, can you look up portal axles in that search? Yeah.
But they've got a version of both the Grenadier and the Grenadier Quartermaster, so pickup and SUV.
Oh, look at that.
37s and portal axles, priced around $200,000. So, yeah, it's no surprise.
It's a pretty coin. Yeah.
Portal axles are really prohibitively expensive for most people. Still really cool, though. And it's got like another 7 inches of ground clearance.
Yeah. So basically a portal axle, if you can't like picture it right now in your head, is basically think of the wheel hub, right? But instead of a normal hub where the axle just enters, you know, either from
right
an
in
angle.
The center of the wheel.
In the center of the wheel. There is basically kind of a gear-driven offset that you can actually make just an additional gear.
Yeah, the axle shaft goes into like the top of the hub instead of the center of the wheel.
So you get better ground clearance. You get, and actually you, the belly, and the axle is also tucked away. If you look at these pictures, you see nothing under the truck.
Yeah, look at how much.
Other than maybe a skid plate.
There's so much space under it. These particular models, too, it seems to be part of the package. They did some different wheels, bumpers, some off-road lights, roof rack kind of thing. So they look really good just in general. Also kind of a cool color. They're doing them in a bright orange. But if you haven't seen this, look into it, especially if you're a Grenadier fan. We love the Grenadier. We had one. It's a compromised vehicle in some way, but all of my favorite machines are pretty heavily compromised some way or another.
But,
you know what I mean?
Yes. I was just going to look up on my little laptop. I was just going to say G-Wagon Squared has a similar build.
Classic, yeah, yeah.
Portal axles as well. And you
iconic.
Know what? These vehicles are significantly taller to drive.
Yeah.
Like when you're getting into a G-Wagon Squared, which fortunately we have had one on loan, you're the king of the road. I mean, you're looking down on most pickup trucks, maybe not semis, obviously, but you're actually elevated above most other people.
Yeah, and interestingly enough, the previous generation G-Wagon, when it was still solid front axle, the previous generation G-Wagon, a lot of people felt like the 4x4 squared, as much taller as it was, actually handled better than the standard G-Wagon because not only was it taller, but it was also quite a bit wider. But we had one of the new generation G-Wagon Squareds here at the office. Roman had it out to Moab, did some really cool stuff with it. That was an insanely cool vehicle, but also a lot of money. Was
well,
it closing in on 400?
I think it was closing in to 300,000.
Okay. And I thought it was over 300.
Maybe.
That was
maybe
a long time with ago. Some that, was, that was a year and a half, two
yeah,
years ago.
It's so. Probably closing to 400 right now, especially because of markups and other shenanigans that a dealership may
describe those as shenanigans.
May do. But we also have I was just trying to look up some because my brain is not thinking straight today. You can get portal axles from some American companies too, and they've done them on Ford Rangers, Toyota Tacomas, Jeeps.
Yeah.
So you can actually, you don't have to have a British-made, British, French-made Ineos Grenadier to
do
this.
Well, I've never gone through the process of building out a G-Wagon as a trail rig, so I don't know a lot of the companies and brands that do it. I know, it seems like the kind of thing I'd do a lot, but I guess Litech, this German company that made the portals that are on the Grenadier, apparently I'm told they make quite a few parts for G-Wagons as well. So
it could be the same company potentially.
Yeah. It sounds like they also make parts for the G-Wagon. Don't quote me on it.
I found it, Casey.
Litech?
No, Curry Axles. I met Casey Curry on a Ram event, and his company
Subtle flex.
I apologize.
$28,000.
So for your JK, a hybrid portal axle set, front and rear, will cost you just $28,000.
It's like 14 grand a piece.
But
it's a deal.
But dude, you're getting so many other benefits. Let's say you're building a really capable rig and you have an option of spending, $8,000 or $20,000 on some beefy axles, or $28,000 on the portals.
Yeah.
So just another little step.
It's a lot of money. It's well into the realm of diminishing returns.
Yes.
Where you could...
What about the coolness?
It's very cool. With a JK Wrangler, you could probably do 95% of whatever you're going to go do with portal axles with just
Without portal axles?
A basic lift in 35s or 37s.
Yes.
But the cool thing about portal axles is the amount of clearance that you get, which is obviously one of the main perks of going bigger on tires on a 4x4. The amount of clearance that you get having portal axles is equivalent to having just an insanely huge tire moving a standard axle further from the ground.
He makes them for JLs also. No big deal.
Are they?
Same price.
Oh, it's the same price.
Same price. It doesn't matter, JK or JL.
So you're telling me I could do a 392 Wrangler with some portal axles?
Yes, that's exactly what I'm saying.
Sounds good to me.
It's a Jeep Wrangler 392 squared.
I wonder, does it say how much tire you could fit if you do portals on a JL? Could I have like a 392 with portals and 44s? Is that we're building a rig.
Oh, it does. It will accommodate up to 42 inches of tire.
Which means, I bet you it'll do 44s.
But why?
44s be fine.
Really?
Sure.
How about a nice 40? I mean, do you really have to go 42?
A 40? you could. Okay. But yeah, go big or go home, Andre.
Okay. Well, since you're spending 28 grand on axles, you might as well
you
go
42s. You got money for 42s minimum.
Exactly.
I think the way I read that
yes.
is that 42s are the minimum amount of tire that you're going to want to run.
Really?
Maybe a little trimming.
So that's your excuse then.
Trimming and
okay.
44s or 46s.
Anyways, so you could do different, you could play around with fun axles no matter what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever seen there's websites that are like, oh, try and spend this billionaire's money?
This is the one way.
That's where I start. That's my first website.
Curry Axles?
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Curry4x4.com.
Nice.
Yes. By the way, family business, you know, third generation business.
Been around forever.
So that's really cool. All right. So we talked about some fun things. I'm gonna save that for later. Q2 sales. So a couple of interesting things happened. Cole. So we had a story about this on TFLTruck.com. We had the Ford Expedition, which is recently updated, yeah. outsold the updated Tahoe in the second quarter of 2025. This was just a little bit ago about the Expedition, dude. I don't know if I remember in recent years that this has happened.
That's a big deal because the Tahoe and the Suburban have been the benchmark for such a long time. I feel like the Tahoe and the Suburban have been the benchmark since the Sopranos.
Probably. But look at the data. I mean, if you are watching us, all of them improved during their sales except the Jeep Wagoneer, unfortunately, that declined.
Yeah.
So that's a whole nother story. But the Cadillac, the Suburban, the Yukon, the Tahoe, the Expedition. Expedition grew year to year by 44% in sales. This is huge.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Armada went down a little bit. Do you think that's because they were shifting production to the new model?
Yeah, same thing for the QX80. Although QX80 is speeding up. I mean,
they don't sell a lot of Sequoias, which kind of makes sense. Toyota has so many SUVs.
But the Sequoia decreased actually.
Yeah, slightly
by 9%.
By a couple hundred.
Yeah.
Not a ton.
But know what Sequoia numbers to where they were before the refresh? Those were minimal numbers. I mean, they barely sold 1,000 Sequoias a month, or I think it was a quarter. This is quarter number. Actually, you're right.
I'm always a little surprised when I see Sequoias on the road because even out here in Colorado where there's Toyotas around every corner,
yeah.
you don't see tons of Sequoias by comparison to anything else.
And I think part of this, especially the push from Ford, by the way, when you combine the Tahoe with the Suburban, they outsell the Ford Expedition. No problem.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of them went to fleets because we fly around a lot. You know,
yeah,
we go
I have
to
been
different,
seeing a lot of Expedition rental cars.
Yeah. So a lot of them in Colorado, they have red plates, you know,
so
with
you
a red
tell.
Background. So you can kind of tell which one is a rental. And I see a lot of rentals also.
Yeah.
Which is nothing, I mean, bad necessarily, because it's a very big SUV that's very comfortable.
Yeah.
You could just take all your people.
And there would be
no
way to break down what percentage of them are going to fleet sales
not
versus
in this data.
Individual. Yeah.
yeah.
They don't usually break it out in that much detail.
And detail. Then I don't have a table published on this yet on TFL Truck because I've been slacking a little bit.
I doubt that.
But Ford F-Series sales, this is including the Super Duty and the F-150, came up 17%. Silverado sales came up 2%. Ram truck fell down, except their 1500s did pretty well, came up 1.5%. So they're slowly recovering from some of the sales slumps that they had last year. GMC Sierra came up 11%. Toyota Tundra was down 6%. That's kind of a surprise.
Mm. How's Tacoma?
Oh, Tacoma up 37%. Oof. Oh, maybe that's where all the sales went.
Could be.
A lot of people are...
That's substantial.
And even for Tacoma, so in the first half of the year, they sold 131 approximately 1,000 Tacomas, which means more than 250,000 of them will be sold in this year, potentially. That's a huge amount of mid-sized trucks.
It is, yeah. Tacoma, as always, is a force to be reckoned with in the mid-size segment.
Yeah, sure. And still, even if you look at this data, the Chevy Colorado is still like half of where Tacoma is. So even though Chevy Colorado sales improved as well, and the Ranger improved, and the canyon improved.
Yeah, we helped improve the canyon.
We just purchased the canyon.
Yeah,
we had one. Tacoma is still king of midsize. I mean, there is no going around it.
No signs of slowing.
You know who else did great? The Maverick. We also, that was December 31st that we bought our Maverick, but the Maverick improved in the Q2 by 26%. So actually, this data is pretty positive. So a lot of people are still buying these trucks, and there's a little bit of shuffling where, you know, some brands are doing better than others.
Yeah, and it's cool to see. It's a hugely competitive segment, which always means we're going to see a lot of news in this area as they continue to improve these vehicles. So that gives us a lot of stuff to do on TFL Truck.
Exactly, which is really great. Two other items. Roman just walked in this morning, and he told us that we have a new trailer in our fleet.
Yeah, a tiny little motorcycle trailer that he forgot he owned.
I have seen it. I have put my eyes on it.
How is it? You'll tell me honest.
It's a little rough. So, you know those trailers with tiny, tiny little wheels?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it has...
Like that big?
No. Well, not toy wheels. Not toy wheels.
A little bigger than that.
Cole, can you look up like a tiny motorcycle trailer to carry motorcycles? Motorcycle trailer.
I could picture it. That's
so personal. It's kind of like...
Tiny motorcycle
trailer. Kind of like the one...
Like a steel frame.
Yeah, but it's got the wooden... it's got plywood in the middle of it.
Yeah.
So something like this, but picture...
But a lot
smaller
worse.
Wheels... the wood is warped, so we need to replace the plywood that's on top of it. It's got a 4-pin connector, obviously no brakes,
because
it's so tiny and so small. The lights are attached with magnets to the rusting frame.
Yeah, rust is not super magnetic, not as magnetic as you would want.
I don't know how those lights actually will work, but the tires look in good shape. So the positive is that those little baby tires, they're fairly decent.
Well, that's good. Yeah, so we got a tiny new trailer that we're going to have to do a little makeover with.
Yeah, but I think, should we Ike it? No.
Yeah, on what, the K-Truck?
Yeah, yes. K-Truck towing our tiny trailer. That could be very interesting.
We could do.
So that's a project that we need to... But actually, it will help our bike channel. We might be able carry a bike from... what's happening with Andy and our Yamaha?
Yeah, Roman bought a really cheap motorcycle at the auction for around $1,500. And it's getting worked on a little bit. It needs tires, it needs rear brake pads, and it needs the jets on the carbed... The jets on the carbs opened up a little bit because it's got aftermarket pipes running a little lean. So, yeah, it just needs some love. But when that gets done, we can ride it back, so I don't have to mess with that rusty trailer for a little bit.
Okay. But if Roman buys another cheap motorcycle...
Hootie bike, he might.
So we could carry that.
You can never count it out.
Right now, I'm a little nervous because my house has had no power. There's a power outage in my neighborhood.
Yeah, we're getting real behind the scenes now.
That's lasting 15 hours now.
Yeah, and it's almost, we'll continue being real behind the scenes. It's 3:50 and we leave here at 4:30. So you're about to find out if your house has power or not.
Well, so my fridge, we have coolers, so we got some of our food into coolers.
Let's get even more behind the scenes. What's in your fridge that you're worried about spoiling?
My parents
mangoes.
They bought this nice-looking cake.
Do you have ice cream?
A little bit of ice cream.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So ice cream I'm not so worried about, but the cake, even though it's not very expensive, it looks so amazing. The cake looks really nice.
Is the cake at risk of melting, or are you just worried it'll spoil because it's not cold?
Will spoil because it's got whipped cream.
You'll get Giardia or whatever
happens
when you leave something uncooled. So like cream cheese frosting?
Because
that could grow some bacteria, I bet.
Yeah, so that's behind the scenes. But you know why I brought it up? It's because I really wish I had my F-150 hybrid. Because if I did, I had that 7.2 kilowatt system. And we showed a video of my F-150 hybrid powering a house with our friend Justin.
Yeah, and the battery on your BMW i8 would probably only run a couple outlets for a couple minutes.
But the i8 doesn't really have a lot of power export.
It's true.
Also, most new electric trucks, like the Silverado EV, Sierra EV, Lightning, even the Cybertruck have power exports in them. So I was really missing that this morning and today, because it's also 95 degrees.
Is your house is set up
no.
to run off of?
No, no, I was just going to run cables.
So your cake is, oh, okay,
no,
an extension cord.
I was going to run an extension cord into my house.
Then you could have saved the cake.
Yes.
Well, next week we'll have to check back in on
my cake situation.
If the cake made it.
Okay.
I'm glad we really went into this level of detail.
No, but I'm upset because my 2019 Tundra really has no 120 volt outlets.
Yeah, nothing.
Like why? Like why have a truck with no way of like charging other things from? That's why I'm upset right now.
You should get a second gen Ram with a PTO on the. On the transfer
and
case.
Just idle it.
Exactly. Use it as a generator.
Yeah.
Or if there's a body of water, some flowing water near you, you could have a water wheel. That might do something.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, on that note.
There you go.
Dude, no. I have solar. Which is useless right now.
Yeah.
Because I cannot disconnect my house from the grid because on a normal day, I would sell a little bit of energy to the grid. But now, because the grid is having a problem, I can't disconnect because I don't have a switch. My solar is doing nothing.
Yeah.
Zero.
I know there's a reason for it, but it is kind of odd that when your house has a power outage, your solar doesn't.
Do anything for you.
Yeah.
On a very sunny day.
You would think, but apparently not.
On that note, I think we'll close this particular episode of TFL Talking Trucks.
Yeah, so let us know what you think in the comments down below. We can talk about what's in our fridges and freezers more often.
Yeah, and do you think Ram did enough with their comments?
We'll find out.
Let us know.